Jeva Surevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, so I'll just read the text. Tatra tatra pura grama kara ketavata karvata shivira rajagosha sarta giri vanashamadishu anupattam vani chara pasadahe paribhuyamano makshi kabir ivavana gajas tarjana tadana vamehana stivanagrava sakshakrit raja prakshepa putivakta turu taistat abhiganayan nevasat samstana itasmin deho palak ashane sat apadesha upayanu bhava swarupena swamahima vashthanena samharupitaham mama bhimanatvad avikandata mana prativim ekachara pariba brahma. Okay, we can repeat. Tatra tatra. Here and there. Pura. Cities. Grama. Villages. Akara. Mines. Keta. Agricultural places. Vata, gardens. Akaravata, villages in valleys. Shibira, military encampments. Vraja, cow pens. Gosha, residential places of cowherd men. Sarta, resting places for pilgrims. Giri, hills. Vana, forests. Ashrama, in the residential places of hermits. Maybe you can make it so it's not so echoey in the loudspeaker there, because it's set for the kirtan for yesterday, so it's really a lot, very bassy. So adishu, and so on. Anupatam, as he passed through. Avani chara apatsadahai, by undesirable elements. Wicked persons. Paribhuyamanaha, being surrounded. Makshikabihi, by flies. Eva, like. Vanagajaha, an elephant coming from the forest. Tarjana, by threats. Tadana, beating. Abamehana, passing urine on the body. Stivana, spitting on the body. Gravaschakrit, stones and stool. Rajaha, dust. Prakshepa, throwing. Putivata, passing air over the body. Duruktahai, and by bad words. Tat, that. Avigannayan, without caring about. Eva, thus. Asat sangstane, habitat not fit for a gentleman. Etasmen, in this. Depa upalakshane, in the shape of the material body. Sat apadeshe, called real. Ubaya anubhava sarupena, by understanding the proper situation of the body and the soul. Swamahima, in his personal glory. Avastanena, by being situated. Asamaropita aham mama abhimanakvat, from not accepting the misconception of I and mine. Avikondita manaha, undisturbed in mind. Prithivim, all over the world. Ekachadaha, alone. Paripa Brahma, he wandered. The translation. Rishabhadeva began to tour through cities, villages, mines, countrysides, valleys, gardens, military camps, cow pens, the homes of coward men, transient hotels, hills, forests, and hermitages. Wherever he traveled, all the bad elements surrounded him, just as flies surround the body of an elephant coming from a forest. He was always being threatened, beaten, urinated upon, and spat upon. Sometimes people threw stones, stool, and dust at him, and sometimes people passed foul air before him. Thus people called him many bad names and gave him a great deal of trouble. But he did not care about this. For he understood that the body is simply meant for such an end. He was situated on the spiritual platform, and being in his spiritual glory, he did not care for all these material insults. In other words, he completely understood that matter and spirit are separate, and he had no bodily conception. Thus, without being angry at anyone, he walked through the whole world alone. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Narottamadas Thakur says, Dehasmiti nahiyar samsara bandana kahantar. When a person fully realizes that the material body and world are temporary, he is not concerned with pain and pleasures of the body. As Krishna advises in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, text 14, Matraspasya stukante sitoshna sukadukadaha agama payano nityas tongs detikshasva bharata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O sign of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. As far as Rishabhadeva is concerned, it has already been explained, Idam Shariram Mama Durvibhavyam. He did not at all possess a material body, and therefore he was tolerant of all the trouble offered to him by the bad elements in society. Consequently, he could tolerate people's throwing stool and dust upon him and beating him. His body was transcendental and consequently did not at all suffer pain. He was always situated in his spiritual bliss. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, text 61, Ishvara sarabhutanam videsh arjuna tishtati ramayan sarabhutani yantra rudani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. Since the Lord is situated in everyone's heart, he is in the heart of hogs and dogs also. If hogs and dogs in their material bodies live in filthy places, one should not think that the Supreme Personality of God in his Paramatma feature also lives in a filthy place. Although Lord Rishabhadeva was maltreated by the bad elements of the world, he was not at all affected. Therefore, it is stated here, Swa Mahima Avasthane Na. He was situated in his own glory. He was never saddened due to being insulted in the many ways described above. So, Om Ganat Tivadanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmeditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is, of course, is a very exalted position in devotional service where one can tolerate all those things. And that indicates, of course, Lord Rishabhadeva is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's one thing. But this indicates that someone, if he's exhibiting these particular symptoms, is on the platform of Uttama Adhikari. So there's three platforms of devotional service, as you all know. There's Kanishtha Adhikari. I was just reading about this in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Really an interesting description given by one of, or several of, Lord Rishabhadeva's sons. Lord Rishabhadeva had 100 sons, of who the chief was who? Does anyone know? Bhart Maharaj. And then he had 9 sons who were like Kshatriyas, and he had 9 sons who were called the Nava Yogendras, who are actually like Kavi, Havi, different names like that, who are great self-realized souls, and they traveled around naked and just, anyway, they were perfectly self-realized Krishna conscious souls. And then the rest of them were engaged in, they were like the pundits here. They did fruitive activities. You know, not like the pundits here. The pundits here were not half as good, 1/1,000,000th as good as them. They actually did the fruitive sacrifices, the karmakanja sacrifices, properly. In other words, they followed the rules of the Vedas. Ashastravidam utsrija vartate kamakarata. As Krishna says, one who doesn't follow, in the Bhagavad Gita, one who doesn't follow Shastra, Nasukim, Naparam Gitim. He doesn't become happy, nor does he get the supreme destination. So even in the Karmakanja practices, you have to follow Shastra. It's not that you make up your own mantras and you have a kava sacrifice or something like that. That's ashastric. And so, Shradana Purusha Dharma Shasha Parantapa Aprapyamavni Vartante Mrityu Samsara Vartmani. In other words, one who does not have faith, Shradana Purusha, in the Dharma, whether it's the Karmakanja Dharma or the Bhagavat Dharma, then he simply comes back to the material world and takes birth after birth. So anyway, so getting back to the point that so there's 9 who are the Navayogendras, 9 who were the kings that were divided up the earth amongst Rishabhadeva's sons, and the rest were actually these Karmakanja type of people. Okay, so there was a discussion. The reason I'm talking about this is there was a discussion that Maharaj Nimi was asking the Navayogendras about devotional service. Why is one attached to this world? What are the different varieties of devotional service? And the Navayogendras began to speak about the different levels of devotional service, beginning with the Kanishtha Adhikari. So the Kanishtha Adhikari, Kanishtha is a materialistic type of devotee. He worships Krishna in the temple, and you know he may exhibit a lot of devotion for Krishna in the temple. He doesn't have much faith, because he can be persuaded to switch religions like this. You know, someone can just say, hey, would you like to become a Christian? You know, here's the advantages for becoming a Christian. We'll educate your children, we'll give you food, and you can become a Christian. So he said, oh, yeah, sounds good. You can eat chicken. Sounds good, isn't it? You know, anyone who's eating meat or chicken or anything like that, you know, he's no more. I don't even know if he's a Kanishtha Adhikari, but he certainly can't go beyond Kanishtha Adhikari because he's not seeing God in everyone's heart. including the animals' hearts. So that's the lowest class. You know, he worships God in the temple, and everything related to the temple is very nice, but when he goes outside of the temple, all hell breaks loose. So Kanishta Adhikari. And then he treats Vaishnavas. He doesn't know how to discriminate between who's a Vaishnava, who's not a Vaishnava. He treats people like hellishly, or he exploits them in different ways. So generally people are like that. And it's not that we should discourage people who are on that platform. We should encourage them and worship the deities. I mean, of course, all the three classes worship the deities. But basically, we should encourage people to come to them and worship the deities. And, you know, even if sometimes we've seen people very enthusiastic to worship the deities, but if their spiritual master tells them one little instruction, they say, no, Gurudev. You know, little instruction like, you know, something about the hair or the dress or something like that. They say, no. But then they'll go on the altar and just dress the deities very, very nicely. We've seen people like that. They'll do such a great job on the altar or cook nicely or something like that for the deities. But so that's Kanishta. It's not a criticism. It's just we have to recognize and engage people accordingly. Okay, so you worship the deities, you know, Hare Krishna. I won't give you any instructions. You know, that's as a spiritual master, I have to recognize that. If someone's a disciple of Kanishta Adhikari, I said, you know, I basically don't ask me for any instructions, just worship the deities and chant Hare Krishna, you know, do the best you can, and I'm happy. So then, after that, there's the Majjhima Adhikari. And of course, the Majjhima Adhikari is known as the person who discriminates between the different types of entities. He has the Supreme Lord, he has the devotees, he has the innocent, and he has the envious. And the envious, it's described, he avoids. Sometimes people misunderstand and they think a Majjhima Adhikari is supposed to hate the envious. He's supposed to avoid the envious. Why does he avoid the envious? That's because of his compassion. Because he doesn't want them to make offenses, that's all. It's not that he hates them, but he doesn't have the ability to bring them to a higher level. And he understands that if they blaspheme him or blaspheme the process of devotional service or the holy names, they'll go down further. So he just avoids them. So he avoids the envious, he preaches to the innocent, makes friends with the devotees, and worships the Supreme Personality of God. And he does see that Krishna is in everyone's heart. But his realization of that is limited. He sees it, he understands it, but he doesn't have 100% realization of it. So therefore, he may have a tendency, like we're seeing described here, that if he's attacked, he may get angry at the person who's attacking him. That's a Majjhima. So, and then you go to the Uttama Adhikari, and of course the Majjhima doesn't really, you know, just one more point about the Majjhima Adhikari, the Majjhima doesn't really know Shastra that well. I mean, he can't really quote and defeat someone utilizing Shastra. He has faith. He has firm faith. But, you know, he's really not that expert in Shastra. And so he can't really do too much. I mean, he can preach to basically people who don't know anything about Krishna consciousness. But when it gets to anybody more than that, that someone has some knowledge of the Vedas, then he can't really deal with them. Of course, as we're speaking about these three different classes of devotees, there's also gradations within each class. That's another point. There's also, like you can say, there's a Kanishta Kanishta, Majjhima Kanishta, and Uttama Kanishta. And then you have a Kanishta Majjhima. I know it sounds complicated. Kanishta Majjhima. Then you have Majjhima Majjhima. And an Uttama Majjhima, and of course in the Uttama Adhikari you have a Kanishta Uttama and a Majjhima Uttama and a Uttama Uttama. Okay, so you got different gradations. It's not that, you know, it's just like one type of Uttama Adhikari. So the Uttama Adhikari, in addition to what the Majjhima Adhikari has, he has complete knowledge of the Vedic literatures. I mean, he may not know every verse in every Shastra, but at least he knows enough to be able to defeat anyone philosophically who challenges the philosophy and practices of Krishna consciousness. In addition, his understanding that God is everywhere and everything is functioning according to God's will is complete. Basically, one sense it says he sees... This is an interesting thing, because I always had a question about this, but the 11th canto answered that question. He sees everyone is serving Krishna. Right? He sees everyone is serving Krishna except for himself. That's Uttama Adhikari. So you would say, well, then he wouldn't make discrimination between a Vaishnava and a non-Vaishnava. But that's not really true, because he sees everyone is serving Krishna, but he sees some serving Krishna under force, like Prabhupada said. Like in the prison house, the prisoners are serving the government, being forced to serve the government. I don't know here in Fiji, but in some countries they have prisoners make the roads. Do they ever do that here in Fiji? That the prisoners would go out in the roads in a chain gang. You know what a chain gang is? A chain gang is you chain all the prisoners together, and then they make the roads in a particular place or country. But certainly, I think they probably engage the prisoners here in doing something useful for society. I mean, I don't know what they do. Do you know? Farming. Okay, farming. And then they sell the vegetables and everything like that. So, what's that? Oh, industries and things like that. So in other words, they're serving the government. Or they're serving the people. Somehow or other. But it's under force. And how much do the prisoners get paid when they do that? 1 cent a day or something? So, that's like the material world. We're serving Krishna, but we get 1 cent a day. It's not very satisfying, is it? I mean, you're serving Krishna. At least you want minimum salary. So it's like that. That's how the Uttama sees. And the description of the 10th canto is very specific about that. Because sometimes devotees get confused when they think an Uttama is just looking at everybody. I'm thinking everybody's serving Krishna the same way. But they're not. One person is being forced, another person is doing it voluntarily, another person is more elevated. So the Uttama does make discrimination. He does see different levels of devotees. It's not that he's blind to these things. And he does see different levels of people being envious or favorable to Krishna consciousness. However, his equal vision makes him or allows him to accept whatever is happening to him to be the Lord's will. And that's really what's happening here with Lord Rishabhadev. I mean, at least the example Lord Rishabhadev is teaching. That whatever happens, the Lord is doing to one. Whatever happens outside of one's control, I want to qualify that. It is not that if one does something foolish... Let's say one is driving his car. The other day, one devotee was driving their car and they were speaking on the mobile phone. They got an accident. They can't say, that's Krishna's arrangement. No, they were foolish enough to talk on the mobile phone while they were driving the car. And they got an accident. And they have to pay for it. Don't blame Krishna for that. If you do something foolish, I mean, like even like insofar as diet is concerned. Like if you're eating all sorts of foods that you know will kill you, and even though it may be prasadam, you know, just all sorts of, you're eating 20 gulab jamuns at a sitting and 100 jalebis, you say, it's prasadam, it's maha prasadam, it's Krishna. And then you somehow really get diabetes and heart disease and say, that's Krishna's arrangement, my heart disease. No, you fool. You didn't listen to instructions. You didn't listen to your brain. You didn't listen to common sense. So there are some things that we're responsible for. I mean, I gave the example, I think in a previous visit, the devotees one time got in a car accident and some devotees died and Prabhupada was asked, did they go back to Godhead? You know, it was Krishna's arrangement. And Prabhupada said, no, it was their foolishness. They had to take another birth in the material world because they fell asleep while they were driving. And that was a common thing in the 1960s. Devotees would sleep while they were driving. And I remember many times that of course, I would sleep only at the red lights, so I was safe. I never had trouble. I mean, so the person person behind me would wake me up. The car behind me would wake me up with a horn. Beep, beep. Okay, time to drive. But many devotees would fall asleep while driving. And then I'd be sitting next to them in the car, and the car would just gradually go off the road. And I have to go, wake up! Okay. So Prabhupada said that's foolishness. So the point is, we do have a certain amount of responsibility in this world. I mean, a great deal of responsibility in this world. But other than that, you know, things happen. You know, people, we'll find people that don't like us. Of course, I've never experienced people throwing stool and urine at me, but maybe that'll happen in the future. But even more painful than stool and urine being thrown at you, or stones being thrown at you, the harsh words from people. I mean, that's actually even more, the most painful thing, more painful than having a knife stuck in your heart, is to have someone who you may love or care for or be concerned about, and they just say something really heavy, like, you know, like I hate you or something. And one has to really see Krishna behind that. Because in this world, friends will become enemies, enemies will become friends. And if you're really just trying to exploit relationships by enjoying the other person, then you're going to get very disturbed. Understand? Normally in relationships in this world, we try to enjoy the other person. You know, someone gets married, or someone has a friend, or even someone has a disciple, or someone has a guru. It's like Prabhupada talked about guru bogies. Right? Guru bogies? One who tries to enjoy the guru. It's got guru bogies and guru chagis, two things. Renounce or enjoy the guru. So when we approach a relationship with that enjoying spirit instead of a serving spirit, then we're going to be in trouble, ultimately. Because when you're frustrated, when you're trying to enjoy, what happens? You get angry. Jayate vishau pumsang sangostesha pajayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha vijayate. So you get angry, right? If I approach you and I think that you're meant for my enjoyment, like I think, well, here's Nityananda back there, and I think, oh, he's meant to serve me. And if he doesn't serve me, then I get angry. Because I have this expectation, or a demand, actually a demand from him. It's not just an expectation, it's a demand. So basically a pure devotee, he goes into relationships with not an expectation that someone will serve them, but with an expectation that he will serve them. You understand the difference? In other words, wanting to serve. And that's actually much more enjoyable in a relationship. It's like I was seeing yesterday that, you know, they gave me the benediction of being able to serve the people at the feast. And it was very enjoyable, much more enjoyable than eating myself and being served. So we should go into relationships or interactions with that particular intention of serving the other person. Then you can have wonderful relationships. Whatever relationship, whether it's, you know, husband, wife, or friendship, guru, disciple, devotees in the temple, we should see ourselves as, what is it, Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa 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 Anadasa. We're servants of a servant of a servant of the Lord who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan. So this mentality will keep us from getting angry. And the mentality of understanding that whatever people do to us, whatever happens to us, is Krishna's arrangement. Just like I gave the example the other day when I was walking on the street and the dog bit me. That was Krishna's arrangement. I didn't ask the dog to do that. I didn't say, you know, please bite me, here's my leg. It wasn't my fault. So was Krishna's arrangement. Of course, now if I don't walk with a stick, that's my foolishness. So you see the discrimination right there. But so in other words, one has to see that Krishna arranged it for a specific reason. Why did Krishna arrange that? That's for us to figure out. Krishna does everything for a purpose. So if people start to criticize us, if people don't like us, or, you know, we're in a difficult financial situation, or the weather, or whatever it is, that Krishna's teaching us something. And so this is what someone like Vrishabhadev, of course, as I said, Vrishabhadev is Krishna. This is what someone like Vrishabhadev is thinking. That's what their consciousness is like. That is, Krishna is teaching them something. Krishna is doing something. And basically, to keep, even the hardest part is to keep loving the person who's doing that to you. Because if you don't love them, if you hate them, if you blame them for what they're doing, then you're just as culpable. That means you can be blamed for the same activity. And that was brought out in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where you have Dharma the bull being beaten by the personality of Kali. And Parikshit Maharaj asks Dharma the bull, who has done this to you? And Dharma the bull does not blame the immediate perpetrator, who is Kali. He says, basically, he says, this is Krishna's arrangement. You know, this is the time factor, this is Krishna's arrangement. So this of course, is an Uttama Adhikari. So we should come to that platform. Haridas Thakur is another example, getting beaten in 22 marketplaces, and in spite of that, being concerned with the welfare for the person who was beating him. Haridas Thakur and the prostitute, same thing. Concerned with her welfare. So that is a test. If you want to come to a higher platform of devotional service, that's a test that all of us are going to have to pass. Every single one of us is going to have to pass the test of loving the person who attacks you. If you want to remain a Kanishtha Adhikari, that's your problem. You're the one who has to pass the test. I can't pass it for you. No, the pure devotee can't pass for it. I mean, everybody thinks, if you confirmed, everybody thinks if you get the mercy of the pure devotee, you get an easy ride, a free ticket. Right? Like an honorary degree at a university. You know, you take some, just like last night, some of the devotees were passing the foot bathing water around. Oh, I was so upset. Because I was thinking, I get everyone's karma. Oh, how can they do such a thing? So since everyone's thinking, we'll become Krishna conscious, this magic substance. Of course, if one is an actual devotee, you know, taking the foot water or the dust or the prasadam remnants is very purifying and there is magical substance. But still, you're the one who has to make that step. You're the one who has to develop this tolerance, matra sparsha, sukantiya, sitoshna. And the only way you're going to do that is by seeing Krishna everywhere and seeing Krishna in everything. Krishna says in the Gita, one who sees me everywhere and sees everything is never lost to me, nor is he ever lost to himself. I mean, so he's never lost. So that is the consciousness that of an Uttama Adhikari. Krishna is in everything, everywhere, and whatever happens is Krishna's arrangement. Now another point there, just one other point about being detached, is that a pure devotee also is identifying, as I mentioned in a previous class, with a spiritual body. So that helps a lot with the detachment. You're not identifying with this body anymore. He's not attached to this body, not identifying with it. So even though he appears to be here, he's not here. Even though a pure devotee... So therefore, one shouldn't try to ascertain what is the consciousness of a pure devotee. Acharyamam viganiyam navamanyeta karichitna machyabudya suyeta sarvadeva mayoguru. That's the statement that the acharya, or the devotee, the pure devotee, should not be seen as an ordinary person. Namarcha buddhya suyita sarva deva. The statement is he's like the sum total of the demigods, which means his consciousness is completely transcendental above the demigods. And therefore, don't try to speculate about what his consciousness is like. So with Lord Vrishabhadeva, it's like that, or with someone like His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, it's like that too. So, we'll end a little early to take questions. Any questions or comments? Questions, comments? Yes, Nityananda. How can we become detached from our body? Become attached to, first of all, your service. I mean, ultimately attached to your spiritual body, but that's a long way off. I mean, you don't know what your spiritual body is, and it wouldn't help you to know what it is anyway. Isn't it? That would be, you'd be a sahaja. Just like you see in Vrindavan, you see these men dressing up as ladies, and they're the ugliest ladies you've ever seen in your life. You know, a man with lipstick on and a little beard, you know, a shadow of a beard. So Basically, in the beginning, we're attached to our service and the process of bhakti. Two things. The process of bhakti. We're attached to the sadhana process, waking up early. What attachment? How do you get attached to someone? Okay, something. You get attached to something by doing it enough. You know, in the beginning, it's difficult. Like waking up early. When I first joined the Krishna consciousness movement, waking up early was the most difficult thing. I was already vegetarian, already chanting Hare Krishna, already following the four regulated principles. But I was also waking up at 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. Because basically, I'd finished university. What was I doing? I was driving a taxi. For those of you who want to know what I was doing. I finished the university driving a taxi, and then driving a taxi at night because there was more money there. Because we would pick up people in the bars, and we get big, I don't want to say donations, tips. You know, they wouldn't know how much they were giving me. You know, we get like $100 American tip like that. And so I was working at night. And actually, by Krishna's arrangement, one of the other taxi drivers gave me a book, Prabhupada's books. So you see, Krishna arranges things. Even if you're doing something so far removed from Krishna consciousness, Krishna makes an arrangement. And then we had philosophical discussions with many of the other taxi drivers. Because in America, many taxi drivers have university educations or even PhDs. Because they make more money doing that than working at the university. So, anyway. And it's tax-free. We won't tell Vishwanath that. Because when you get a tip, you don't declare it to the government. So, basically, waking up early was very difficult. The first day I came to the temple, the first thing was off with the hair. All the hair went away. People are very attached to hair. Prabhupada called long hair hippie seeds. So we see some people with long hair, that's hippie seeds. We should say, you're a hippie. You understand hippie? Prabhupada was asked, what is a hippie? There was an interview, and Prabhupada replied to the reporter, you know better than me. But he said, something wonderful. So for the first day, they said, now you have to wake up at 3:30 in the morning. And I was thinking, but that's the time I go to sleep. And so, the first few weeks, it was painful. But then, what happened? You get into a habit, and then I got attached to it. I'm attached to waking up early. I'm attached to going to my wife, because you do something enough, and you get attached to it. You get addicted to it, right? It's like chanting, same thing. But if you don't do it, you don't get attached to it. So therefore, first we get attached to the process of sadhana by what is painful in the beginning, or like poison in the beginning, like Krishna says in the Gita, happiness in the mode of goodness. And at the end, it's like nectar. So you do it, and you do it, you do it, and then it's, wow. I can't imagine life without Mangal Arati. It's just like, it's inconceivable. So then you become attached. So then later on, and then also you become attached to the service of the spiritual master and to the deities. I mean, this is all a gradual progress that one has. Later on, you feel some happiness or ecstasy. Of course, even in the beginning, there's transcendental ecstasy, or at least shadow attachment. So then you get attached to that. You get attached to the festivals, Krishna conscious festivals. You get attached to the Krishna Katha, Ram Katha. So all these attachments are there. So when you're attached to something else, you don't notice what's happening in the body. Right? Like I saw yesterday, many people were dancing and chanting who normally they just have to sit in a chair. You know, isn't it? Because normally, on a normal day during Bhagavatam class, they sit in a chair, you know. You know, I have back problems. I have so many problems with my body. But when it gets time for the festival, everyone's dancing and chanting. They forget they have a material body, right? We saw so many devotees dancing and chanting, and Vishwanath was leading a nice kirtan, they forgot about the body. at least for half an hour. The time, prasadam time, they remembered about the body. They thought the tongue. And they were saying, that sannyasi's there, he's not letting us eat until the guests eat. That cruel person. Thank God he's leaving soon. So in other words, by doing something enthusiastic, utsahan, isn't it? Utsaha. It means enthusiasm. Utsahan is yadaviat, as it said in the Nectar of Instruction. Then one actually forgets the body, becomes detached from the body. If you're enthusiastic about something, absorbed in something, you forgot that you have a material body. I mean, so you have to work also according to your psychophysical nature. Like if you're doing something in the beginning outside of your psychophysical nature, you'll remember you have a body. I'll give a personal example. Like I have to attend GBC meetings and sit there for 8 hours, and it's not my nature to do that, so I definitely remember I have a material body. You know, the whole time I'm feeling uncomfortable, shifting position, trying to pull out my iPad so I can do something. Isn't it? You saw it. Vishnu saw what it's like. It's like torture. But some people, if it's their psychophysical nature, it's like nectar. Isn't it? Some people at the meeting were just like, bring it on, you know, more. Why 8 hours a day? We should have 20 hours a day of meetings. So, in other words, you have to, isn't it? You sort of like that in some people. Was Gopal Bhatta there at that time? He was just like, wow, empowered, you know, just like enthusiasm. And there I was trying to sneak and look at my iPad. And while the chairman was just looking around, who's looking at their iPads? You know, so I put it under the desk like this. Did you see that? I was looking at it, and sometimes they caught me. Oh! Put it away! Because it wasn't according to my nature. So one should just, of course, you know, I'm surrendered to Prabhupada. If he wants me to sit through the meeting and experience torture for 8 hours, for 2 weeks, I'll do it for Prabhupada, not for anyone else. But at the same time, if we want to be absorbed and forget that we have a material body, we should do something according to our psychophysical nature. And then later on, after doing all that, you become attached, maybe to the holy Dham, to, like, I'm attached to Govardhan, and I think of Govardhan a lot, and that keeps you from thinking of your body. And then the ultimate stage is you understand your siddhadeya, or spiritual body, and then you finally have no attachment to the material body at that point. So in different stages, to answer your question, at different stages of devotional service, there's different remedial measures for becoming detached to the body. So you have to figure out what your stage is. And then generally, what I advise devotees is engage according to your psychophysical nature. That's why Prabhupada talked about Varnashram. Not that Prabhupada wanted, you know, this system where you exploit other people in the name of Varnashram, you know, the caste system. But he wanted people to engage in things so they would remain engaged their whole lives in Krishna consciousness. Are you a Brahmin by nature? Are you a Kshatriya by nature, a Vaishya, or Shudra by nature? You know, by nature, you know, I have a Brahminical, mostly Brahminical nature. Of course, Prabhupada said in Kali Yuga, everyone is a mixed caste of unknown origin. So mostly Brahminical, so that if you put me in a GBC meeting, which is mostly management, it's woo. Or if you send me to business school, you know, ugh, I can't stand it. Or if you put me in send me to auto mechanic school to learn how to fix a car. I mean, I know how to do it, but it's just like, huh? It's boring. I get bored. But if you talk about, like, philosophy and things like that, or especially history, I like history. I mean, I know my own mind. Like, I studied the history of Indian religion, you know, I did a course on that, and I gave the course, and I love that. You know, it's so exciting to me, because that's my nature. And it's not better than your nature or anyone else's nature, it's just different. So you have to understand what your nature is, and work accordingly. And of course, if you're not a Brahmin by nature, it's not a good idea to take sannyas. You know, so you have to, you understand? So many people who are shudras or vaishyas are thinking they're taking sannyas for the wrong reason. Or kshatriyas. They're thinking, I'm taking sannyas so everyone will listen to me. That's what a kshatriya thinks, right? It's a system of management. You take sannyas and all the disciples go, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Get to work. Yes, sir. A management tool, right? Or if you're a vaishya, use it to make money. Or everyone should donate to the spiritual masters. And if you're a shudra, I don't know what you would do if you were a sannyasi. No, if you're a shudra, you would be just trying to have a lot of beautiful girls as disciples. So only those who are brahminical by nature, mostly brahminical, should be taking sannyas, because it requires a great deal of intelligence and attachment to philosophy. So you know, you should know thyself, you know, your own nature. And if you don't, you ask advice from the spiritual master or other advanced devotees. What or how should I be engaged? And then you forget that you have a body then, because you're enthusiastic about doing what you're doing, right? I hope that answers the question. Okay, I think that's it for class. So all glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. It worked this morning. By your mercy.